Hi, my name is Jake Levine. I work in the White House Office of Energy and Climate Change for Carol Browner, who I'm here with today. She is the Assistant to the President for Energy and Climate Change. We just want to say thank you to all the folks out there on Facebook today for joining us. And with that very brief introduction, I will turn it over to Carol.
And let me also thank all of you for joining us today. And let me apologize. We had planned to do this earlier in the week, and unfortunately, my schedule did not allow. But I'm glad we're able to be with you today and to take your questions and provide you some answers. So Jake's going to go ahead, keep sending in the questions, and we will do our best to answer them.
We've been getting, so far, a number of questions on the resources down in the Gulf. So I think we'll just start there. Kim Moses sent in, pretty straightforward, how many people are actually dedicated to the cleanup?
So this is, as you know, the largest environmental disaster in the history of our country, and we have mobilized the largest response. Already there are over 25,000 personnel in the region. There are, the National Guard has been activated. We have given the states permission to call up to 17,000 National Guard. There are 4,500 vessels working out in the Gulf of Mexico. There's over 5 million feet of boom that's been deployed. There have been more than 165 controlled burns. You know, obviously, as this continues, and it will, you know, continue for some time, we'll have to increase those resources, and we will continue to increase them as need be.
Maybe a follow-up to that one from Jennifer McClurg Roth asking, why do we not federalize the cleanup process?
Well, the cleanup process is done at our direction. Each state have a plan, a contingency plan in the event of an accident. And we've been deploying resources and directing BP to pay for this against those plans. Now, obviously, we've never seen anything like this before, so the states have been modifying their plans. For example, Governor Jindal, his plan did not include a set of berms. They came to us, suggested these set of berms. We directed BP to pay the cost of building those berms, which will provide protection. Last week, the president traveled to Louisiana for the third time. We were in Grand Isle. The mayor of Grand Isle had a number of ideas, again, not in the state plan, a number of ideas on how to protect some of the oyster farms in his community, and that is now moving forward. We have directed BP to pay. So I think this idea of federalizing, I understand the question, but I think it's important to know that we direct BP, they pay for it. We don't think the taxpayers should be paying to clean up and to prevent damage that's caused by BP. So we will continue to direct them. We direct them on virtually a daily basis to do any number of things, whether it be take actions to prevent damage, or in the case of the relief wells, as you probably know, there's a relief well being dug that will finally cut this off permanently. When they came to us with the plan for the relief well, we said, that's great, but we're going to direct you to dig a second relief well. So we have some redundancy in case we have a problem with the first well, and they are now doing that. So daily directives in terms of what steps they need to be taking to ensure that every single thing is being done, first to contain this leak, and now obviously also to ensure that there are adequate resources as that containment is put in place to capture the oil, and then secondly, to make sure everything is being done to prevent the oil from coming on shore, and finally, in the instances where it does, cleaning up and restoring those marshes, the estuaries, the beaches that have been impacted.
And what about offers from foreign governments? We have Betty Tussey who's asking, I'd like to know why the Jones Act hasn't been waived to allow foreign offers with technology to help collect oil.
There are a number of foreign offers that we have taken advantage of, and the Coast Guard analyzes them, and I think we have, help me here, we have taken from Belgium, do you remember
that? I think from the Netherlands.
The Netherlands, Canada. I think there's one other country. If it's necessary to waive the Jones Act, then that will be taken care of. At this point, it hasn't been necessary.
Switching gears slightly towards some of the actions that we're actually doing for the cleanup, a question on the dispersant issue from Sandra Howard. I want to know why you allow the continued use of Corexit in our waters, knowing that it is toxic, when alternative dispersants can be used.
EPA maintains a list of acceptable dispersants. I think there are about 18. This is one of the dispersants that's on that list. Obviously, we're in a situation where we've got a toxic product, oil, very toxic, and we're trying to do our best to make sure that it doesn't damage the beaches and the estuaries and the marshes. EPA has been monitoring the use of this dispersant. They will continue to monitor the use and analyze potential impacts. They have directed BP to use less of the dispersant, significantly less. And so if EPA makes a determination that even less needs to be used, that directive can be issued. If they make a determination that other dispersants might be more appropriate, that directive can be issued.
In terms of the actual science of the containment, one of the questions we've gotten is from Deb Hope, who says, I don't understand why they cannot create some sort of wraparound tube or hose like Affair to contain the oil that is still gushing. If they could contain and direct it out of the water to minimize the damage, can they not do that?
Well, this is I am not an engineer, so I will do my best to explain this. A very, very complex situation, and we've had our best minds working on this. Dr. Stephen Chu, the Secretary of Energy, has been leading a team. Dr. Chu is a Nobel Prize winning scientist. He's been leading a team of, I think, almost 100 experts that we've brought to look at what are the best steps. What can we do to get as much of this captured as quickly? Now, we learned a lot from the first effort where the big dome was placed down there and it didn't work because of these crystals that form, these hydrates that form. The current system that's in place had to be very carefully managed to ensure that we didn't have the same problem, the hydrate problem. So it is working to the best of its ability right now. Obviously, it is not capturing everything. We're all keenly aware of that. The next step is that there are some lines that were used in the top kiln in the effort to push the mud down. Those are being reconfigured at the direction of our scientists, and they will then be taken to a second vessel where more oil can be offloaded. And finally, the hope is that there will be a more permanent riser, that's the pipe that goes up to a boat, that can be installed, and that will take some time. It has to be built. It has to then be brought to the site, but that permanent riser would then be attached to a vessel that would be more secure in the event of a hurricane. We are obviously in hurricane season. We are worried about hurricane season, and so we would like to, the vessels that are out there now will not be able to ride out some of the worst storms that might hit, and so getting a sturdier vessel out there that's capturing in a system that will allow it to detach from the system and reattach more quickly in the event of a hurricane.
Thanks. We've been getting some questions on the moratorium. So I'd like to just read a few and then maybe we can go through them. Candy Saul says, what is the moratorium on all wells going to do to our oil bills here in Maine, where the economy is already so bad we can't afford oil? And on the other side of that coin, sort of related, Omar Arif says, no more drilling. How can we authorize any permits for future drilling in the seas while this mess with BP is ongoing?
Well, thank you both for your questions. Very, very thoughtful questions. Let me explain first that there is no reduction in production wells. There are two types of wells. I'm going to try and simplify this. There are those that are producing, and those continue to operate. The focus of the moratorium of the suspension is on the drilling wells. That's where this problem occurred. It was a well that was being dug. It wasn't yet in production. It was going to be capped, and then at some point down the road, it would have been turned into a production well. So it is only the deep water drilling rigs, if you will, or wells that have been put under a moratorium. There are shallow wells also in the Gulf of Mexico. Those are continuing with their drilling and then into production. In the shallow wells, it is very easy to get to the device, the blowout preventer that closes the well in the event of an accident. And so the Secretary of Interior thought that those wells and that drilling should continue. We don't know what happened here. We don't know if there was human error, if there was a technological failure, or if there was both. And until we know what happened here, it is absolutely essential that we not continue the drilling until we know what happened, so we know what steps can be taken to make sure it doesn't happen again. Now, the president has appointed a commission, an independent commission, that will be looking at all of these issues, making recommendations in terms of what safety features need to be added, what needs to be done to ensure that this won't happen again. They'll also be looking at, in the horrible event that something did happen, how could you more quickly close it, capture it, looking at the cleanup. They're going to be looking at everything. We're very mindful of the fact that this is an impact in the region. We're also mindful of the fact that 11 people lost their lives. Yesterday, the president and I joined him, visited with the families of those rig workers who have passed away, and obviously our hearts go out to them. But we're also mindful of the fact that the impacts on the communities of the Gulf are quite significant, whether it be the shrimpers who can no longer work, the beaches that are not available for summer enjoyment. And so we want to make sure that we're doing everything to ensure that we won't have another tragedy like this.
As a follow-up to that, on sort of the regulatory side, we've gotten a couple questions about you know, what are our regulators doing to ensure that that happens? One in specific from Paula Othier says, I'm wondering if any real changes are going to be made at MMS. Seems like the department that was supposed to be doing environmental review just left everything in the hands of BP. Will there ever be any real oversight?
Thank you, Paula, for that question. And Secretary Salazar has already taken a number of steps and is continuing to ensure that everything is done to make sure that health and safety inspections, health and safety requirements are being fully met, that the permitting, the environmental concerns. This was obviously a deeply troubled agency within the Department of Interior. We've all seen the reports over the prior administration of very serious concerns, their ethical concerns. When Secretary Salazar came to office, he immediately had all of the employees of MMS enter into an ethics agreement. Since this accident, he has actually split the agency because of the potential for conflicts. You had one entity that was collecting the revenues from the leasing activities, at the same time permitting the activities, and in charge of the health and safety environmental. And so he has broken it into three pieces. The royalties pieces is now separate from the permitting, which is now separate from the health and safety and the environmental concerns.
Sort of sticking with the policy end of things, we had a question from Jeanette Slight asking, I know this is another difficult situation for you. Will you please convince Congress to put more money and time into alternative energy sources such as solar and wind? Linda Brooks echoed that and said, is it clear that we need alternative energy sources? Why can't more be done to incentivize the scientists to go after this?
Couldn't agree more, and the president has long been committed to comprehensive energy reform. We were successful in getting a bill through the House. There are several bills that have passed out of committee in the Senate. We were in a bipartisan meeting yesterday with the House and Senate leadership. This president again called on the Senate to pass a bill off the Senate floor. We have an opportunity in this country. If we make the right decisions, if we put in place the right requirements in terms of renewable energy, we can have large-scale capital investments in renewable energy, in the R&D that will help us, help our country lead the world in the clean energy revolution. There is no reason why we shouldn't be at the forefront of that. It does require getting in place all of the requirements from renewables to cleaner cars, where we're already taking action, so that we can create the market certainty here for the investments here. You know, if I'm a wind manufacturer, I'm going to build those wind turbines where I can sell them. And right now, we have invested heavily in wind energy through the Recovery Act. But as we look to the future, it's the countries that are setting the standards, requiring a certain percentage of renewable energy where those wind turbines are going to be built. So what we want Congress to do is pass legislation that gives us a renewable electricity standard, for example, puts a cap on the dangerous pollutants, the greenhouse gas emissions, so that those capital investments will get made here because you can sell those products here, and then we can sell them around the world. So it's a win-win. It's good for the environment. It's good for jobs. It's good for the economy.
What can people do to help? This is a theme that's coming through a lot on the stream right now. Chris Castro asked, how can university environmental organizations help with the BP oil spill disaster? And Michael Buckingham said, what can the average American do to help in the oil crisis?
Well, and we really appreciate all the offers of help, and there are certainly organizations, there are nonprofit organizations that are organizing people. For the people in the region, for example, people with vessels, boats that can be perhaps equipped with skimmers, we're taking advantage of those opportunities, bringing those people out to work in the skimming operations. And the other thing, I think there was a question from a university scientist. We do get ideas, we do forward them into the agencies to review. There is a wealth of information posted on the DOE, the Department of Energy website that shows all of the data we have. We'd encourage people to take a look at that. If you have ideas, please let us know.
Thank you. Larry Chavez asked, this is a repost. I'm sorry I missed that one earlier. But in case you missed it, my question was, I've heard several safety inspections and processes were overlooked prior to this. Will there be criminal charges brought to those found negligent in this disaster?
The Attorney General and the Department of Justice have indicated that they have a large investigation underway, looking at all of the actions, looking at all of the authorities, the various laws that they can use, and they make that determination ultimately whether or not to proceed with a criminal and civil charges. But there is a large investigation underway, and the Attorney General actually traveled to the region, I think it was about 10 days ago, where he met with all of the U.S. attorneys, the federal attorneys in the region, but also the state attorneys generals, and they will continue that cooperation.
Sort of along the same lines in terms of the liability, Bill Halstead asked, Ms. Browner, we hear a lot about BP and its efforts and financial outlays to clean up and provide restitution to families impacted by this. What about Halliburton and Transocean? Are they not equally liable?
Because BP is the leaseholder under the Oil Pollution Act, they are the ones that we hold accountable. They are the responsible party. I am certain that they have lots of contracts between each other in terms of how, I wouldn't say I'm certain, I would think they have a lot of contractual relationships that they will have to sort through. But one of the good things is after the Exxon Valdez, Congress passed the Oil Pollution Act, which set up authorities for holding a party responsible. And that's why we are able to direct BP to pay for all of these activities and continue to direct them to pay for activities, both to contain the oil and to prevent it from coming on shore, and then ultimately for the cleanup. We also are able to direct BP to pay the claims of individuals who maybe experience a loss of income because of the spill. For example, I mentioned earlier the shrimper who may not be able to work this season. There are economic claims that can be filed, and BP is directed to pay those.
And just following along that vein, Mark Schreier asks, how will the residents of the Gulf Coast be compensated? What's going on the ground there?
So there is a claims process that's in place. You can file a claim, and then it is reviewed and paid. We have brought in the FEMA, Tracy Waring, because FEMA is very, very skilled at processing and moving the claims process through. There have been complaints that the claims process was moving slowly. We had a meeting here in Washington on Wednesday with Admiral Allen, Tracy Waring, others from the federal government, with the BP folks, and we have directed them to do a number of things to speed up the processing of the claims, but also to make the whole process more transparent. We think there's some important information that the public should be able to see, that we should be able to see, and so we've directed them to do that.
In terms of some of the payments here, following along similar lines there, Scott Futrell asked, why can't we have a major public works program to put people to work and clean up the Gulf and then just bill BP later?
Well, this is the largest environmental response ever. And in fact, we just sent BP a bill for $70 million for the money that the federal government has already spent, and we will be sending them many, many more bills. And so that is happening. The work is going on. They are getting billed. They are getting directed to spend money, and we will continue to do that.
All right. I think we probably have time for just one more. And it comes from Gillette Judy, who says, in the wake of BP's dishonesty about the size of the spill, will you encourage Congress to pass legislation making it a felony crime for a corporate representative to mislead the government? What can we talk about in
well,
terms of...
Well, that's a good question. I would think that under the existing laws, there is probably authority to do that. You can't mislead the government. But I do, let me just take this opportunity, because the question sort of has another question embedded in it, which is the flow rate. And to just help people understand that that BP does have a vested interest in what that number is, because they can be forced to pay a penalty, a per barrel per day penalty. That's why we set up an independent group of scientists to look at the information and to make determinations, if you will, as to what that flow rate is. Now, for those of you who are scientists, you appreciate how scientists work, but not all of us, you know, are familiar with the scientific process. Scientists start by looking at available information, they ask questions, they analyze, and then they go back and they recheck. And so yesterday, the scientists who have been looking at the flow rate, looking at the plume that you can see on TV, they have been able to enhance the videos, determined that the amount of the flow was greater than what they had originally thought. And so we made that information available when they concluded that sort of reanalysis of the pre-cut flow. Remember, there was the bend in the pipe. The pipe has been cut now. So what they were looking at were the videos prior to the cut, the pre-cut of the riser. They are now looking at the videos post the cut. And we will continue to make all of their work available and those numbers available. The numbers may continue to change. There's also some other ways that the scientists have beyond the videos that they're using. There are some pressure measurements. There are some additional pressure measurements that they think will be helpful. And so you may see that number change in the next couple of days. But it is absolutely our commitment that we will get the best possible number, because we recognize not only is that important in terms of the containment, it's important in terms of all of the strategies on the water, the burnings, the skimming, the booming, but it's also important because ultimately the American taxpayers have a right to see these penalties collected. So let me thank you all for taking the time to join us today, and we look forward to talking again.
Thanks.